It's the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where we spend time chatting with expert gardening guests and we ask for their favorite tip. I'm Christy Wilhelmi. Thanks for joining me. Today's guest is Erica Waldman, professor of psychology at Cal State University Northridge, where she teaches classes about food choices, best practices in sustainability, eco-psychology, and cognition. Erica is an avid forager in both urban and wild settings, and she traveled the U.S. for 6 months gathering food and medicine in the forest to live off of without spending a single dollar on meals. I'm so happy that you're here, Erica.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we were on a panel together a while ago, and that's how we met. At least that's how I remember it. And I did my homework, and I looked you up ahead of time, and I came across your TEDx talk where you're standing barefoot on stage on a patch of native grass that you brought in for your talk. I think that says so much about who you are and how you walk through the world. How did your connection to the wild begin?
Probably like many other people, it began when I was a kid. I grew up in rural Missouri, and my mom came from a farming family. And we were, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, so most of our vacations, you know, were camping on the weekends. So we'd go out camping. Mom liked to fish, and I had a fishing pole that was bigger than me my very first Snoopy fishing pole. And so, you know, my sisters and I play out in rivers and streams and climb trees and stay out until dark catching lightning bugs.
Lightning bugs.
Yeah, we don't have those here.
I wish we did.
Yeah. And I'd say that was, you know, really the woods raised me.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much I want to ask you. I don't know where to start. So you teach classes on foraging, and that includes urban foraging. But do you teach classes about foraging in the forest as well?
So at the university, I teach classes about sustainability, best practices in sustainability, and food choices. So the psychology of food, factors that influence our food choices. And I got interested in foraging when I really started understanding better how our ancient bodies misalign with the modern world. Mm-hmm. Our bodies are, they came from our hunter and gathering ancestors, and they, you know, they're evolved to store fat and to crave sugar and to do all these funny things that aren't really serving us, you know, in a world of vending machines,
right,
and fast food restaurants.
Yeah.
So I really got interested in what it would be like to live in alignment with our ancient bodies. And that's when I started foraging. Well, that's when I started, when I decided to go live in the forest for 6 months. I didn't really actually know much about foraging when I did that. I knew what blackberries were and raspberries were, and I'd gone mushroom hunting a couple of times, but I definitely didn't have enough knowledge to survive. So I really started foraging when my life depended on it. Mm-hmm. And then I started teaching when I got back. I learned so much while I was away, and I felt like as someone who is a lifelong learner and educator, I needed to pass that information along. I benefited so much from my time in the forest, and I really wanted to share that with other people.
And I'm curious, what did you eat while you were up there?
You know, pretty much what I eat at home, except it just didn't come from the grocery store. Uh-huh. Greens, a lot of kind of salads, chickweed, mallow, stinging nettle, dandelion, various thistles, miner's lettuce, those sorts of greens, mm-hmm. a lot of berries, and a lot of seeds and nuts. So you can get California black walnuts are our native nuts here. Mm-hmm. Oaks produce really delicious, fatty, protein-rich, carbohydrate-rich acorns that you know, you can process to make bread.
I was going to ask you about how did you process the acorns, because you have to leach them, right?
You do, yeah. So I actually just use the same ancient techniques that have always been used since we began eating acorns. You crack them and toss them into a river. A nice clean mountain stream, preferably. In a bag so you don't lose them all. Mm-hmm. And you wait, you know, 2 or 3 days. The nice thing about putting them into running water is that it's constantly being leached. Mm-hmm. So leaching is the process of soaking them in water until the tannic acids get removed. And if you do it in a bucket, you've got to constantly change the water. Mm-hmm. But in the river or stream, the water's just being constantly changed for you. Mm-hmm. And there's really no work. You just come back when it's done. So it's quite convenient and fast. It happens over the course of, like I said, 3 to 5 days, depending on how much tannic acid, what kind of variety of oak you got. And you'll know when it's ready because the acorns taste sweet and yummy like chestnuts.
I have to try that sometime. Yeah. That really sounds... It sounds great. It does. You also teach on other topics like medicinal chocolate, herbal beer brewing, and happy hour cordials. Mm-hmm. Where do you learn these fascinating skills?
So, I like to cook, and when I lived in the forest, I had to find ways to cook all of these foods that I was harvesting from the wild and from the urban wild. My full-time job out there was find food, process food, cook food and sleep, really.
Right.
So, you know, you've got a lot of time on your hands when you have abundance to figure out cool ways to process and cook your food. So I got inspired, though, to host these workshops and to, you know, do things like add medicinal herbs to chocolates and brew beer out of wild herbs that I find, because I want people to also feel connected to the wild food in a way that I do. And unless they know how to consume them, they won't be compelled to go out and hike, which is really what I want people to do, not necessarily forage, but get outside, go yeah. spend time in nature. And you can, at the end of your hike, have ingredients for a beer.
Yeah, it's true. People... You know, I try and convince people to grow kohlrabi, and they're like, what do you do with it? But once you know how to do something with that thing, you're more interested in, you know, acquiring it or growing it or whatever. So
totally.
Yeah. Well, that I love the idea, even though I don't drink beer or really enjoy cordials, but the medicinal chocolate part sounds really interesting to me.
Yeah, it's tasty.
Yeah. Now, one of the main reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast was to talk about foraging, specifically wild mushroom foraging, you know, among other types of foraging, and we'll get to the urban type in a minute. But what does a typical foray for hunting mushrooms look like?
Mushrooms grow, various species grow seasonally, just like, you know, fruits grow seasonally or vegetables grow seasonally. So you need to know the season of the mushroom you're hoping to find. For example, if you're a porcini lover, porcini like to come out in the fall. If you're a morel lover, morel like to come in the spring. So you need to know the seasons for your mushroom, or else you'll just go wandering around in the woods and get disappointed. Mm-hmm. You won't find them. And then you also need to know things like the kinds of trees those mushrooms might like to grow with, or the kinds of landscapes they might like to grow with. For example, morels like melting snow.
Really?
Mm-hmm. They do. And conifer forests. And, you know, in L.A., we don't have naturally occurring conifer okay. forests, at least.
Right.
So you already know you have to go into the mountains mm-hmm. a little higher up.
Yeah.
Chanterelles like coastal oaks. And they're, in fact, mycorrhizal, which means they grow specifically with a certain tree root. And in this case, with chanterelles, coastal oaks. And so you can find those all along Topanga, all along the Santa Monica Mountains and Topanga and Malibu up to Santa Barbara, all up the entire coast.
And so, well, so I have two questions that are running through my head right now. So there are, because I'm reading Mycelium Running right now. I've had it on my shelf for years as a reference book, but I haven't read it cover to cover, so I'm actually doing that right now.
Cool.
Mycelium Running by Paul Stamets. And he was talking about the symbiotic relationship between mushrooms and certain types of trees or other plant species, and that's helpful, I guess, if you know what you're looking to know what you're looking for would be to know the plants that they're in symbiosis with.
Yeah, in fact, I think as a mushroom hunter, one of the most important things to become familiar with is tree identification.
Yeah,
I'm less of a mushroom hunter than a tree hunter. Mm-hmm. When I'm in Colorado and I'm looking for porcini, I'm actually looking for blue spruce. So I have to find the blue spruce, and then I know I'm going to find the porcini.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's helpful right off the bat.
Yeah.
And someday I'm going to go mushroom foraging. I joined the Mycological Society for 2 years. I paid my dues. I never went on a single foray.
Oh.
I never went to a single meeting because I couldn't get there. But I am still headstrong and will get there at some point.
We'll carpool sometime.
I would like to go. And as I said, I think I said to you once before, you can blindfold me if you don't want me to know your secret locations where you find mushrooms. Because I know that is a thing.
I have actually done that.
I would love to do that. I would absolutely love to do that. And they show up, do they show up, you know, a certain number of days after a rain, or does it matter? What's it like that?
Again, it kind of depends on the species. So, for example, an oyster mushroom doesn't really need much to show up.
Mm-hmm.
One tiny rain and you'll find oysters in their proper locations. But we need 6 weeks of rain at least for a chanterelle to come.
So you're going up north for that?
So generally, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I found chanterelles all over the Santa Monica Mountains,
but
even down here.
When
but we
was
used to
that?
Get a whole lot more rain.
Yeah, exactly.
It was 2008, 2009, mm-hmm. 10, even into 2011, I was finding 50 or 60 pounds of chanterelles a season.
Wow.
Last year, I found one chanterelle.
Yeah. It's been dry.
But I'm kind of hopeful for this year. So we just got a bunch of rain and we'll see.
Okay. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
It's coming in the next couple of weeks.
This is timely.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, you also participate in urban foraging, which includes not only dumpster diving, which we're going to talk about in a second, but also finding edible plants in the city. What common edible plants can people find if they're walking on the city streets? And you even sort of mentioned this already, but if...
Yeah, there are a lot of plants that people grow in their yards because they're beautiful and don't necessarily know they're edible. For example, people love to plant rosemary and lavender as hedges. They mm-hmm. grow so nicely here and they're really fragrant. And we spend a lot of money buying rosemary essential oils and lavender spritz or what have you from the store when you can just get it for free. There are less common plants, but once you know them, you'll see them all over the place. For example, Australian bush cherries are one of my favorites. People tend to plant them as hedges. They're actually trees, and sometimes you'll see they allow them to grow into their full tree glory. But most of the time, people trim those back. And they're nice hedges, and they grow little pink fruits on them, little tiny, look like cherries, not actually in the cherry family, but they're called Australian bush cherries. And they're crunchy like watermelon and kind of tart and delicious.
I'm thinking of strawberry tree. Is that a common name for it?
That's a different tree.
It's a different tree.
And I see strawberry trees a lot,
especially
on the east side of Los Angeles. I see them a little less on the west side. Those are different, and those are also edible and super tasty.
And I know that there are, against all odds, dandelion roots growing up through concrete, you know, cracks in the sidewalk and that kind of thing. What else do you use a lot?
Well, right now common mallow is in season, and the leaves are so delicious. They work great in risottos or in soups or as grape leaf wraps for dolmas. You can find two of my favorite little greens I mentioned earlier, miner's lettuce and chickweed, growing all in the alley, you know, in all the alleys and along sidewalks, especially where there's shady, you know, little kind of some shade from trees. You'll find the obvious fruit trees all over Los Angeles. And in California, it's legal to pick any fruit that's hanging over public land. So, for example, if it's hanging into the alley or if it's hanging over a sidewalk, you can pick it. if you'd like. I highly recommend going and knocking on your neighbor's door and asking, but but it is legal to pick those fruits. And oftentimes there's such an abundance that the neighbors don't care. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're happy that someone's actually using it.
Yeah. And there is a website that...
Fallen Fruit.
Yes, Fallen Fruit.
Has, it doesn't get updated as often as it could, but Fallen Fruit is a good resource for those sorts of things. But really, I think one of the best things you could do is just grab your phone, make a call to your mom or your dad or someone who's going to talk for a really long time, and go for a walk and just look up. Yeah. And if you do that regularly... Even if a tree isn't currently fruiting, eventually it will be, and you'll notice. And right now I get avocados, lemons, limes, oranges, blood oranges, persimmons, pomegranates, peaches, apples, pears, nectarines. I mean, you know, apricots, you name it, I find it. And and it's just all within a mile of my home.
That's wonderful. And there's carob trees too, where I live, which made carob powder out of that. It's a bit manual, a lot of manual labor, but
totally
really delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you told me once that your mother said she wanted to go shopping with you.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like, yeah, okay, shopping, whatever, Mom. And she's like, no, shopping, meaning dumpster diving. So what, let's talk about that kind of shopping.
Yeah. Well, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I had been hanging out at the Bikerwave quite a lot. They're a bicycle co-op that helps you learn how to fix your own bicycle and promotes alternative transportation through biking. And I remember someone there had gone dumpster diving and, you know, I thought, oh, I'll give you money. Are you hungry? Do you need food? I can help you.
Yeah.
And I saw the abundance of fresh produce and delicious, gorgeous breads and all sorts of things that had gotten thrown away. And I just sort of couldn't believe it. So I went myself one day. And yeah, there you go. Bags and bags and bags of pounds of strawberries with, you know, one moldy strawberry that just like in our own kitchen, when we open up the fridge and there's a moldy strawberry, you know, we pick it out and wash off the strawberries and eat them. But in the stores, those go into the trash. So I just sort of couldn't believe that there were nearly 2 million residents in Los Angeles who were food insecure and this much produce, fresh, healthy vegetables and fruits were being thrown away every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I was going to live off of the waste of capitalism, and I was going to feed myself and all of my neighbors and all of the people on the streets of Venice whatever I could collect from the trash, which was a lot. I did for years.
Right, and I know that there was a movie called Dive that focused on that practice and how so many institutions deliberately try to prevent people from taking stuff out of the dumpster and putting it to good use, you know? Did you run across that a lot?
Well, so I always went after hours, mostly just because I didn't want to scare employees. Not that I look like I'm scary, but I can imagine feeling afraid if you walked out of a store and there was someone digging in the trash. So it was mostly for everyone else's comfort that I did it at night. Twice, a police officer showed up and asked me to leave, and they were really kind. And let me take what I had already gotten out.
Oh, really?
And I always left they were fine with it. They just wanted me to go, let me know I was trespassing. I think one of them I even offered some food to. I had so much.
Right, and that means you have to process it when you get home with it, right?
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Not only would I go at midnight to go grocery shopping and be back by 1 or 1:30, but then I was up until 2:30 or 3 throwing out those moldy strawberries and washing things off and freezing stuff, because in the morning, if I waited, my house would just smell like garbage.
Garbage, right.
Yeah,
and I think, as someone who grows her own food, I picked a basket of chard and carrots and beets and stuff the other day. It took me an hour just to process that, to get it in from the house clean and in the refrigerator. I can imagine you know, when you have to make things suitable for the refrigerator from dumpster diving, it's a process.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And yeah. freezing is a big part of it, right?
Yeah. And, you know, running out of freezer space. So,
yeah,
freezing is a big part of it. Canning also. So I grew up, like I said, with a mom who was raised on a farm. So I knew all about canning and various preservation techniques. And I really used all of it.
What were some of your favorite things to can?
Mostly fruits, so I could make strawberry or berry or blueberry, blackberry jams. I even made lime marmalade,
Ooh.
Which was really fun and delicious.
Really?
I made a lot of apple butter mm-hmm. because we always found way too many apples, and they don't dry so well.
No, they don't.
They're okay, but I don't love them dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are some of my favorites.
Very cool. So what does a day look like for you? In general?
Well, you know, I'm a professor, and I'm also, for the last couple of years, I've been the director of the Institute for Sustainability on our campus. So my days generally look like a whole lot more meetings than they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But right now I'm teaching again. So I'm teaching best practices in sustainability on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I go in and I teach my class. It's amazing. My students come to my office to hang out, and then I'm working on policy issues related to sustainability on our campus. I do grant writing and carry out all of my research activities related to water conservation, environmental choices, behavior change, those sorts of things.
Yeah, which I imagine are shifting a lot with as climate change shifts, those things will be more drastically affected.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And we got a dog a year ago, so
he's
now,
adorable.
Now I'm a mom, and I take my puppy out. We go for hikes. He likes to forage.
What does he like to find?
Well, he likes to sniff flowers mostly,
mm-hmm.
but he loves eating mallow.
Oh, mallow, yeah.
He loves mallow.
Yeah.
It must be something about the way that it generally coats the stomach,
mm-hmm.
and it must be something about that he enjoys. But he munches on it. He loves to smell all the flowers, though.
And what does your lunchbox look like when you go to work?
Well, every single day I eat something either from my garden mm-hmm. or from the wild, and often both. So today I had a salad from my garden. And for breakfast, I had some homemade granola with elderberries that I found in the Sierra Nevadas. Tons of elderberries.
Oh, I was going to say, where did you find elderberries around here?
Yeah.
But you didn't.
We Sierra do get Nevadas. Them here, too.
We do.
Yeah, it's just last year we had so little rain that I left the trees for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's really important to know, we've encroached on their space, so I try to harvest sustainably. And last year there were only a few trees that I normally harvest from that had berries. So I went up to the higher country where I knew there would be more.
Okay. All right. It is tip time.
Okay.
Do you have a favorite tip that you'd like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
Yeah, actually, since I'm here with a gardener, I would like to say, I mean, I garden also, but I'd like to say, stop pulling the weeds from your garden and stop yanking out those nutritious, delicious, drought-tolerant plants that you can eat, and instead learn about them, learn how to use them, and learn how to incorporate them into your diet. Let them thrive so they can nourish you.
Okay, that's a good tip, because I know it's really hard for people to have weeds in their garden.
Yeah.
It can be challenging, but mallow is going crazy right now, and it's certainly something you can do something with.
It's delicious. You can eat the leaves. You can pickle the little capers, the seed pods.
Oh, right. Okay.
You could use the root. It makes for a lovely hair conditioner.
Because I know that it has a medicinal component in the root. Do you generally cook the leaves, or do you eat them raw, or is it not good to eat them raw?
Both. Mallow is fine to eat raw, and it's actually quite tasty.
Okay.
When you cook it, when it gets exposed to heat, it gets a little bit slimy.
Slimy.
I like to call it ochraceous, okra.
Mm.
A little bit like okra. So if you ate it on its own, cooked, it's probably not the nicest texture, but it, like I said, works great in risotto or pastas or soups.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to thicken is really nice. Eating it raw, though, you don't get that sliminess. So
okay. So
yeah.
You could tear it up in a salad if you wanted to.
It's perfectly delicious and full of antioxidants.
Excellent. Awesome. Thank you, Erica, for being on the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast.
Thanks so much. This has been really great.
Very fun for me. Yeah. I could mine you for knowledge all day long. How should people find you? How can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on my website. I offer workshops and walks and forest-to-table dinners on occasion. It's ericawoldman.com. Pretty easy.
And Woldman is WOHLDMANN.
That's right.
Yes. And Erica with a C.
Erica with a C. Yes. And I'm on Instagram.
Okay. And we will put those links to both Erica's website and her Instagram on gardennerd.com this week. And we'll also post a link to her TEDx talk so you can watch her in action. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of gardening information on gardennerd.com. And show your support for this podcast and the other free stuff that we do on Garden Nerd by becoming a Patreon subscriber. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter under GardenNerd1, on Facebook as GardenNerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!